SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We welcome you to hour number two, live right here on this Monday to kick off a new week on the early line. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Plenty to get to here in hour two, in the remainder of our 2 hours across the Spiz Grizz Network. Our continued reactions from the entirety of Wild Card Weekend and a Monday night football finale between the Rams and the Vikings to earn that eighth and final spot in the divisional round as well, and who will head to Philadelphia next Sunday afternoon to take on the Eagles at the Link. Plenty to break down for you in this second hour, into hour number three, and a lot of reactions, DRS, throughout Wild Card Weekend. Not only what it means for the remainder of the NFL postseason, but what it means for some franchises. Even franchises in the NFL like the Steelers that have known nothing but success. But what can the ceiling even be now in the Steel City? We'll discuss that in just a couple of moments here on the early line.
Yeah, there's and again, weeks 1 through 18, we love it. There's a lot of fun, but there's a lot of bad football teams playing. Even though you watch some of these football games and all the outcomes that you want, they're really good football teams going toe-to-toe when there is no tomorrow. If those teams come up with a loss, the victors move on and you reassess the following week. Same thing with college football. And real quick, because I know we're going to start to hit on some college football stuff. The fact that this year, Ben, you know what I love about college football? The national champion, you will never be able to dispute them as an absolute fluke. You get into an actual real playoff, which they have now, where some teams, which include Notre Dame and Ohio State, have to win four games against four quality opponents to be crowned champion. The best football season we've ever seen. It's what the NFL does. Like, there's no flukes if you're a wild card and you run to the Super Bowl. Ah, they got real lucky. No, you had to play and beat some really good teams. I love the way this is playing. The BCS, two teams, four teams. You might have an easy matchup. You get lucky. The other team had a tough one. No, if you have to win four games in order to get to a Super Bowl, like just to say in the NFL, the same thing with college football, you are getting true champions now in all sports. It's a great thing.
That's often how postseasons are defined. Results on the field being the great equalizer. Did you prove it? Did you earn it? Were you defined by your playoff success? We are seeing it in college football, despite some sweeping and scathing overreactions from the opening round of the CFP that have looked really dumb in the last few weeks, including throughout Wild Card Weekend, because you are never questioned in the NFL based on strength of schedule or the playoff format if you were really worthy of that playoff spot. Much more subjective, of course, in college football. A committee decides, not your overall record or divisional tiebreakers. But still, we are seeing in a Wild Card Weekend so far, in five of six games in the NFL, where four were decided by at least double digits in an average margin of 19.3 points per game, with only one by a single score last night in Tampa, that sometimes blowouts happen, but it weeds out even the best of the best. It weeds out the weaker teams that have earned the right to qualify for a playoff run, but to be on that true upper echelon, it takes something even more. As Donnie, we have seen with the Ravens time and again, Lamar Jackson now a 3-4 straight up record as Baltimore blows out the Steelers on Saturday night in the Charm City. What we have yet to discuss is Pittsburgh. Year number 18 under Mike Tomlin has now come and gone, as all 18 seasons have been. Never a losing record, never fewer than 8 wins. Once again, a double-digit win season, not a divisional championship, but a playoff spot. The Steelers have been in the postseason 4 of the last 5 years, even with Ben Roethlisberger at the tail end of his career not being overly great. In the years following Big Ben, Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, these quarterbacks still getting Pittsburgh to the postseason. But what is the ceiling in the Steel City? That is a question I think a lot of Pittsburgh fans are now trying to deal with and rectify in their minds. Mike Tomlin has only known success, but the Steelers have not played for a conference championship since the 2016 season. That was the last year, in fact, the Pittsburgh Steelers even won a playoff game. Donnie, this team has gone a very long time. They have lost five consecutive games in the playoffs, nearly a decade since a postseason win. There were some conversations on Saturday into the early morning hours on Sunday. I'm sure you guys had them as well on Pro Football Today. Should the Steelers look to make a change at the top of their organization with Mike Tomlin as their head coach?
Like, I don't know if they change at the top of the organization. The one thing we understand is, you know, Mike Tomlin has principles. Mike Tomlin has won a Super Bowl. Mike Tomlin wins football games. We get that. Mike Tomlin is never going to be your head coach of an organization and embarrass you on the field and or off the field. And that says a lot because we've seen a lot of coaches go up there and clown organizations like Urban Meyer in Jacksonville. You won't get that. But also understanding what actually goes into being a winning organization. It's being the leader of the organization like Mike Tomlin and picking stale offensive coordinator after stale offensive coordinator after stale offensive coordinator and still having his thumb on that offense saying, we win by running the football, not turning it over, and playing great defense. That was awesome in 1985, 1990. You might be able to get away with that. But it's one thing that he's not going to do, which I think he needs to. Go out and get a guy like Cliff Kingsbury and run your offense and open things up and try new things. Because the one thing I think Steelers fans are getting most upset with is, yes, that's an organization with six championships. They play for championships. Not 500 seasons or just making the playoffs here. I just want to see that offense get into the new millennium and say, you know what? We'll still run the defense. Maybe we have to open things up. And yes, it might be tough to start off where we're turning the football over and not playing Steeler football. But I think we can all agree, the way the Steelers operate now, there's no hope for a Super Bowl. It's the same MO year after year. No. Play good football week to week. Be prepared. Win football games we're supposed to. And then when we need to actually get some offense and win playoff games, we can't do that. New horizons, Mike Tomlin. Just get an innovative young offensive coordinator and let him do his thing. That's what the Steelers need to do, Ben.
Certainly so. There needs to be a change in philosophy, even under the successful Mike Tomlin, where at times, DRS, you can be plagued by your own success because you're never having a disastrous year. So no immediate changes are feeling like they have to be forced to be made. But you said something beautifully there. Pittsburgh, the Steelers, they don't play for a 9-8 record and a wild card berth. They don't play for even double-digit wins in a divisional championship. They play for Lombardi trophies. That is the success of this organization as which it is defined. And maybe there's 18 teams right now that missed out on the postseason and maybe even a couple that made it to the playoffs that would sign up for 18 consecutive years without a losing record. I understand that. The Steelers are a slightly different franchise in the NFL. Something needs to change because at a certain point, you have success, but your ceiling feels like it is really, really far away. Plenty more from Wild Card Weekend throughout this second hour in DRS on Saturday. It got started in Houston, where home field advantage was highly important, but not because the Texans were a favorite, because Houston was a home dog. And they blow out the Chargers 32-12. It was L.A. taking an early 6-0 lead after a couple of field goals. Houston scored 32 straight points. The Chargers scored late, but it didn't really matter. The Texans went outright as a 2.5-point home underdog, a total of 41.5 skies over. The only over of Wild Card Weekend so far in H-Town to kick off the opening round. Second consecutive year, Donnie, C.J. Stroud has led the Texans to a home victory as an AFC South champ, booked as an underdog, catching 2.5 on Saturday against L.A., 2.5 a year ago at home against Joe Flacco and the Cleveland Browns.
And he was really bad early. And as a young quarterback, sometimes, oh no, we're going to have a bad performance here. He got it together. And in games like this, you must lean on your best players. Herbert, you couldn't lean on him. Stroud, you could. J.K. Dobbins, you couldn't lean on him. Joe Mixon, 25 for 106, you could. Wide receiver, Ladd McConkey, who was the single bright spot on that team for the Chargers. Flip it over to Nico Collins, 7 for 122 and a touchdown. Their big performers all stepped up when you didn't get that from the Chargers, which was a surprise to me.
Plenty more takeaways from Wild Card Weekend, what it means for the divisional round next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
From a wild card weekend, there are takeaways of good, of success, and there are also reactions of bad. And when you falter on the most significant stage of your season, and frankly, your career. Let's start again with Houston, a 20-point blowout win at home against the Chargers, outright as a 2.5-point underdog. DRS entering this year after doing the same a season ago, winning outright in a wild card weekend game against the Browns as a slight home dog after an AFC South championship with a rookie quarterback and rookie head coach. The Texans had a ton of optimism this offseason. Are they going to fall short of maybe some of those sky-high expectations? Potentially. But one thing we have to give Houston credit for, at home, after winning a divisional title, this team can earn it in the postseason with C.J. Stroud as its starting quarterback as an underdog. Now 11-7 against the spread with 8 outright victories, including 2 outright wins as a home dog in the postseason. Stroud wasn't sensational, really, which has been the story of his sophomore season. 282 yards, a touchdown, and an interception, but did have 42 yards on the ground. Third most of his two-year NFL career, 112 of those 282 to his top target in Nico Collins, as you alluded to, and Joe Mixon, what a great acquisition for the Texans this offseason, 25 carries, 106 yards, and a touchdown. Even though the Texans were a home dog, they proved once again they understand what it takes to win in the playoffs.
Yes, they do. And that says something about their head coach and their organization overall. It's booked to be back-to-back years as underdogs at home. They always give them that first playoff game as a rite of passage. Just going to get knocked out, but they continue to make it into the next round. The shame of it all is we were talking back in August, like, could this be the year if the Texans and right. C.J. Stroud, particularly C.J. Stroud, take even an incremental step over what we saw last year as a sensational rookie that was in the MVP race late? He said, my goodness, Nico Collins, we know he's going to evolve as a true number one wide receiver and be that is, you know, top five type player, and he is that. But then you add Stephon Diggs as that veteran presence to take some of the heat off of Nico Collins, still have Tank Dell and Mechie and another bunch of quality players, adding Joe Mixon. Like, wow, the expectations now, not to win the AFC South, Ben, but challenge the Kansas City Chiefs for supremacy in the AFC. Now, granted, during the season, you get attrition and you get injuries. You have to adjust those expectations, which we're doing now. And it is unfair to say, like, hey, that's a great win for the Texans. We expect them to be sacrificed against Kansas City, when maybe we were thinking about Kansas City versus Houston in the playoffs in August. Like, wow, this could be a toe-to-toe effort, and maybe this game is actually in Houston and not in Kansas City. I like what I see out of the organization for the Texans. The defense, very good. You have a defensive head coach. That's what's supposed to happen. The offense under Bobby Slowick, not as good as it was last year. Why? Because injuries and attrition and a lot more game film this year that they have than what they didn't have last year under C.J. Stroud. I like the progression for the Texans into the future. It's just a shame we're not getting the full gas Texans taking on Kansas City, because that truly would have been an epic game.
Right. The Texans at a time this offseason, fourth best price to win the AFC Championship. That's where it still remains, but entering the Final Four in that conference. The Texans will be more than a touchdown underdog on the road. Also the first game of a weekend on a Saturday around 4:30 p.m. Eastern time in Arrowhead against the one seed and the two-time reigning Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. On the other end of it, DRS, there is the L.A. Chargers, who have made it to the postseason twice in the five-year NFL career of Justin Herbert. But things felt different this year under Jim Harbaugh. They got this game, winning the regular season finale to be the five seed, to be the road favorite in Houston against the Texans. But something might be cursed in this Chargers organization, seen in the play of Justin Herbert on Saturday afternoon, a guy that in 17 regular season games this season threw only 3 interceptions. He had 4 in a single game on Saturday. More INTs in his one playoff game this year than he had in 17 regular season games as a whole. Listen, he's only played in 2 postseason games in his now 5-year NFL career. And Jim Harbaugh, for a team that had a preseason win total of 8.5 to win 11 and get to the playoffs, still a season of success. But Justin Herbert's 2 NFL playoff games, coughing up one of the largest leads we have ever seen in NFL playoff history, 27-0 on the road in the opening half back in 2022 against the Jaguars, and more interceptions in one game than he threw the entirety of a regular season. How will you remember this Chargers season, Donnie, and the performance in Houston on Saturday in the postseason?
Very fondly. And let me explain why this is and why I like the fact that the Chargers made it to the playoffs, which was great, and then lost in round number one and saw their true inefficiencies, which included Justin Herbert. He knows he has to be better, and I do think he will. He's got all the talent in the world. You know you want to run the football for your Jim Harbaugh guy. So what do? J.K. Dobbins, 9-for-26, banged up this year. He's been banged up through his career. Go and get yourself a true number one. Also at the wide receiver position, you drafted a gem in Ladd McConkey, and now you can see that Quentin Johnston, who was the first-round draft pick, is a complete bust and shouldn't be on that football field. Because understand this, if you're looking for the Chargers, and let's just say they beat the Houston Texans, who's to say Harbaugh and the organization go, you know what, let's just grow into this. We don't need to make any major changes. When you get beat this way in that situation, major changes need to happen. Just go back and look at Michigan. Now, granted, it sounds a little funny. I'm going to explain it. Jim Harbaugh was getting his head beat around when he wanted to take that team to the next level, whether it was Ohio State, make the college football playoff, or win it. You know what he did over the years? The more he lost, the more he cheated. The more he brought in better players, the more organizational changes at Michigan that he made. He'll do the same thing with the Chargers. Look at Bill Belichick when things weren't going right. Hey, you know what? Let me film Super Bowl practices. Let me film on the sideline here. Let me cheat. Let me deflate footballs here. You need a coach that's willing to put your team on the edge to win a championship, and Harbaugh is going to do that. Love the season. Love the loss even more. I'm buying the Chargers' future because they got a coach that will do whatever he can to win a championship, which includes cheat all the way there. Let's do it.
Did not expect that to be the reaction or takeaway. That is for sure. The Chargers have lost three consecutive playoff games now. Last playoff win for this organization, 2018 in the wild card round with Phillip Rivers as its quarterback. So let me get this straight. The Chargers will turn around that playoff lack of success because Jim Harbaugh might have to cheat to get it done.
He'll get better players, he'll get better running backs, he will get better wide receivers, and also he will find ways to bend those rules, get caught, but not get penalized for it. Man, he's a master at that. He is.
A little bit more difficult to cheat in the NFL than that college football. We'll see what the Chargers do. More of Around the Division Around next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. We continue our reactions to Wild Card Weekend with one more game to go on this Monday night to figure out the final spot in the NFC entering the second round of the postseason. But DRS, before we get to Monday night out in the desert between the Rams and the Vikings, let's look at the AFC playoff bracket because everything has been decided on this side of the league. Saturday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Inside Arrowhead, the Chiefs truly begin that third Super Bowl title defense, or at least they look for that third Super Bowl championship. They're more than a touchdown favorite at home against the Houston Texans. And it all will culminate next weekend in the divisional round with a matchup that will certainly be as good as advertised in Buffalo. It's the Bills and the Ravens. Right now, the Flock, an ever so slight favorite, but I'm talking 8 cents of difference on the money line in favor of the Ravens. AFC championship odds at this moment. The Chiefs, DRS, the number one seed, still the favorite. They'll have home field advantage. That AFC title still runs through Arrowhead. Baltimore, again, an ever so slight road favorite in Western New York. 10 cents in front of Buffalo for those conference championship prices. Big win for Houston in H-Town on Saturday. Again, the odds not overly optimistic. The Texans can pull the upset in KC.
No, and this is why, once again, Ben, you fight for that all-important number one overall seed to get the bye, and then you can sit back with your popcorn after you win, or let's just say win the football game and say, man, look at those two teams that got to tee it up. Thank goodness we don't have to play both of those. We're just going to have to play one of them as long as we handle our business. And understand this, too, from that graphic. You see the plus 130. That is correct on the Chiefs. They're home. They're going to play a team they're supposed to beat by a touchdown. That's why they're bet that way. Look at the Ravens, plus 230, and the Bills, plus 240. Understand this. They win that football game, either one, Ravens or Bills. That doesn't mean, we just transfer the 240 and 230 over to the next round. Like, no, that drops basically to a pick 'em as maybe, I didn't see the hypothetical lines if even having that what they're supposed to be. What's that line on either one of those teams going to Kansas City? 2? one, somewhere around to pick them at that point? Like, depending on how those games go, maybe some injuries that play out. So I do agree the Chiefs should be favorites, but the winner of that Ravens-Bills game, they're basically going to be a coin flip against the Chiefs in their own building. A sensational AFC championship game. As long as Kansas City wins this weekend, you are set up for an absolutely epic championship Sunday in the AFC. But for me, I agree with the pricing there. That's the way it should be. I want to see how much of an MVP effort out of those two quarterbacks, which is going to take next weekend to get them into the AFC championship game. And also the attrition, Ben, that we talk about. Like, Kansas City's resting. They're going to get an opponent they should beat. You're now looking at the Buffalo Bills and the Baltimore Ravens, full gas, full go, toe-to-toe, and the survivor gets Kansas City on the road in another game the next week. So advantage Kansas City right now, but that's going to be a fun one to see how it finishes up.
A dollar in front of the Ravens, $1.10 in front of Buffalo. To Donnie's point, what would a projected line then be for an AFC championship game in Arrowhead? Less than a field goal, at least in my estimation. Probably not a three and a hook out there for KC against Buffalo or Kansas City against Baltimore. We are going to have some rematches regardless if the Chiefs do knock off the Texans on Saturday afternoon. Again, KC more than a touchdown favorite. Hasn't been great for Kansas City covering numbers when laying that many points throughout this season. But the Chiefs, of course, in pole position. Even DRS, reaching the AFC championship game would be a small bit of history for the Chiefs. Eight previous teams have won back-to-back Super Bowls in the history of the NFL. Never have any of those eight previous two-time champs made it even to a Super Bowl. Only three times have the previous eight even earned the right to contend in a conference championship matchup. The Chiefs looking to make history in numerous ways this year. Let me get your thoughts quickly on the marquee matchup already for the divisional round. The Ravens and the Bills. You mentioned it. Two MVP contenders. Lamar Jackson, first team AP All-Pro. A good sign that maybe Lamar is going to win his second consecutive MVP award. But Josh Allen in Buffalo going to have a lot to say about that. It will be the final of four games in the divisional round. And the Ravens are a slight money line favorite at this moment. DRS, do you believe that even Baltimore should be having a couple of extra cents as a slight money line favorite in Orchard Park?
I do. And you know, it's funny. It's like Zay Flowers missed that football game. And I said, you know what? That's actually a good thing for the Ravens because they won't get out of what they're supposed to do in the playoffs, which is run the football and use the pass just to hammer that home. If Zay Flowers misses this football game, as stupid as it sounds as a handicapper, that makes me like the Buffalo Bills even more. Just take a picture of that game you just played against the Steelers and use that same formula. You'll beat the Buffalo Bills. It's not hard.
It's going to be sensational. College football next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Exactly 1 week from tonight, a national champion in college football in the first ever 12-team college football playoff will be crowned in Atlanta, Georgia, inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's Ohio State and Notre Dame. So how did we get to that point? Well, we got to recap a Cotton Bowl on a Friday night in the heart of Texas inside AT&T Stadium between Ohio State and the in-state Longhorns of Texas. What a wonderful game it was. What a semifinal statement made in the 12-team CFP. Two games each decided in the closing minutes of the fourth and final quarter, including in the Cotton Bowl. Texas down by a touchdown, 21-14 in the final 2.5 minutes of regulation. First and goal from the one. It seemed as though the Longhorns were going to tie the game and maybe even force overtime at the Cotton Bowl. But Ohio State's goal line defense, supreme and elite, the best in college football all year, had other ideas, which led to a fourth and goal from the Buckeyes' 8. Quinn Ewers drops back, and his freshman year roommate in C-Bus, Jack Sawyer, hunts him down. Sack, strip, scoop, score, 83 yards in a defensive play in a moment that will live on forever in Ohio State football lore. The Pickerington, Ohio native, the Columbus kid, sends the Buckeyes back to a national championship as Ohio State outlasts Texas 28-14. The Buckeyes cover as a 5.5-point favorite in the Cotton Bowl. A total of 51 and a hook stays under. 83 yards to pay dirt, DRS. The Jack Sawyer scoop and score. Again, a lasting memory forever in Ohio State football history.
They got to love that. And now they're going to be in the national championship game, supposed to win it, put another one on the mantle after a season that looked like it was going to end in turmoil after that loss to Michigan and Ryan Day would be fired. How about that redemption story? Going to the playoff and absolutely throttle every single opponent that you play, because it looks like that's a possibility with the game of Notre Dame on deck. Now, let's separate the Ohio State Buckeyes. To me, the most talented team in the country. They're putting it together at the right time. And as I started talking about at the top of the hour, I love this because nobody's going to look back like, man, they shouldn't even have did that. No. They got into the college football playoff and absolutely ran roughshod over the top teams in the country. No fluke, best team in the country. If they do win it, I'll say the same thing for Notre Dame. But also, let's flip it over to the Texas Longhorns. What has most, like, you could just be a casual college football fan. You could be a hardcore college football fan. You could be a Texas fan or a non-Texas fan. The thing that came up the entire season was, I don't understand. Like, Arch Manning was one of the best high school recruits in the history of football, and he can't beat out Quinn Ewers. And every time we watch Quinn Ewers, outside of, yes, he's a solid quarterback, there were games where you're like, boy, I think Arch can do a lot more things here to try to help this football team out and maybe take that offense to the next level, only to have it come down to a first and goal from the 1 yard line, down 7 points, to say, okay, Quinn Ewers is not athletic enough to quarterback sneak this in for a 6-inch or a 2-foot touchdown right now. And I do have a guy on the bench that's very athletic, 6'4, 225, 230, that can absolutely ram this in. Why are we handing the football off and getting no yards and going, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. Let's run a toss sweep or something different. The quarterback sneak might have put you into the national championship picture. So Sarkisian and Ewers, I look at that and say, this is more on you than anything else. That's a play you have to convert, and you have the capabilities with a player just behind Quinn Ewers that would have scored that touchdown, and you didn't use them. Those are the question marks that I come away with. But also, now you know what I'm ready for in the offseason for Texas? For another quarterback to take over for Arch Manning and them tell us he's just not ready yet, even though he's one of the best recruits we've ever had in the history of the school. From day one, Quinn Ewers should not have been the starting quarterback when Arch Manning was there. And congratulations, Texans. You don't have a Texas. You don't have a national championship because of that. And I believe that.
Let me just quell a couple of your fears. Arch Manning is going to start in Austin next year for Texas.
He
is the future of this Longhorns football program. DRS, there are three players in the history of recruiting services that really came around in the 21st century since the start of 2000 that have had a perfect quarterback rating out of high school. All three have donned the burnt orange. Vince Young, Quinn Ewers, and Arch Manning. I have often said that if Quinn Ewers is healthy, he needs to be the starting quarterback for Texas. Arch will have his time and his moment. There were times, though, throughout this season that Steve Sarkisian even questioned that. And in certain moments and in certain packages, we saw Arch Manning not drop back and air the football out, even with a healthy Quinn Ewers, and in games that were not decided in decisive fashion, but used as a battering ram. As we saw early in the second half, to pick up a first down on a short yardage play as well. I was surprised that Arch Manning was not in there, perhaps on first and goal to go from the one. I was also surprised to see Jarek Gibson, a freshman tailback, albeit a big one, who had not played since the Clemson game, and a couple of guys in Quintrevion Wisner and Jaden Blue, who were your only offense, and not to give them the football. I was super shocked to see them try to pitch it to the outside to Wisner on second and goal to only lose 7 yards. I was not overly surprised to see the Buckeyes defense, a team that had allowed the least red zone trips to its opponents this year, the least red zone scores, the least red zone touchdowns, to bow up when it mattered most. That's what Ohio State did on Friday night in the Cotton Bowl. It's what the Buckeyes defense had done the entirety of 2024. And Will Howard wasn't great, but he was pretty darn good. 289 yards and a touchdown. Travion Henderson, the 75-yard screen pass right before the break, where we saw two touchdowns in about a 16-second span in a rather low-scoring opening half that changed the outlook of the Cotton Bowl as well. and DRS for this Ohio State team an opportunity now to win a national championship in the first ever year of the 12-team college football playoff, as the Ohio State program did in the first ever year of the college football playoff back in 2014. And the Buckeyes are heavily favored to do so. They're an 8.5-point favorite, opened as a 9.5-point favorite for the national championship game exactly 1 week from tonight in Atlanta. It's the Buckeyes of Ohio State. It's the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to that. Should be a good football game. I want to see if that Irish defense can prevail, because the one thing we do know is it's way more talent on one side of the football, but sometimes that doesn't matter when it's a one-game finish here. Just play your best football. But let me ask you a question about the future of Texas, right? Because we do think it's Arch Manning. But let me ask you this, though. Quinn Ewers has a year left of eligibility. He comes back to Texas. We would assume that Arch Manning would not play again, right?
No, it's not going to happen twofold. Quinn Ewers also told ESPN's Pete Thamel before the Cotton Bowl he intends to enter the NFL draft in what appears to be a weak quarterback class. Even if he decides that that is not his future, he's in the transfer portal. Quinn Ewers is not going to play again for Texas.
Well, why not, though, if he's the better quarterback and Sark likes him better? Like, if he said, I'm coming back, like, let's just say Drew Aller. Well, there's nobody really behind him. The kid transferred. But if he did come back, it would be interesting. I just look at it like this. If the kid was such a good recruit, you should have played him as a freshman, because, quite frankly, you might have won a national championship this year if he had 10, 12, 15, 20 starts under his belt. I think it was mismanagement, because when I watched Texas, I always thought the problem was Quinn Ewers, honestly.
And Donnie, you're right to question why Steve Sarkisian did not make the move this year. A couple of things. Quinn Ewers did not go to Texas during his freshman year. He went to Ohio State and then quickly became the starting quarterback in favor of Hudson Card back in 2022. He was elite last year in the biggest games, that being Ewers. He faltered this year in the most significant of stages. He threw for 283 yards and two touchdowns against that Buckeyes defense, as good as you will see, and an interception at the end, but costly turnovers. Not sure the stripped sack was all on him. He never saw Jack Sawyer coming to his right side. And again, even if it wasn't a stripped sack, Texas would have turned the football over on downs for Ohio State, probably to ice out the game. Just all to say, Donnie, if Quinn Ewers were to decide to return to college football, it would not be at Texas. I think the Longhorns have learned their future is in Arch Manning. It might have been Quinn Ewers now. It is Arch in the future. Next Monday is the national championship. This Monday is the end of Wild Card Weekend. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We end out Wild Card Weekend, our sixth and final matchup, a Monday Night Football finale tonight in Glendale, Arizona, between the Rams and the Vikings. Of course, let's start there with the location of tonight's game. Of course, not where we expected this game to be even a week ago. But as devastating and tragic wildfires continue to rage on in multiple spots in the greater Los Angeles area, the NFL made this call on Thursday night to move the game officially to Glendale, Arizona, at the home of the Arizona Cardinals. Still billed as a home game for the LA Rams. That's where this will be played on a Monday. Before we get to the game, we send all of our thoughts and our love to everybody in Los Angeles. This show, this program, The Early Line, airs out in Los Angeles on a daily basis. We are thinking of all of you. Long path to recovery continues. Winds are supposed to pick up on this Friday. Those first responders, the firefighters, DRS, doing the very difficult task of still battling these wildfires right now, which led to the location of this wild card game to be moved out to Arizona.
Yes, and also watching some of the pictures, like we see the devastation, but you talk about like the first responders. How about the true first responders, the people actually defending their own homes, seeing them walk on their roofs with basically just a small hose here when the fires are on either side of their house? I can't imagine the trauma and just the days and the exhaustion of just protecting your own. Like we talk about, you get your car banged up a little bit. Oh, what a struggle it is just to get that fixed. Can you imagine losing not only your house, but every single thing in that house there? And yes, most people will be walking away. saying, you know what, at least I have my family. But I can't imagine the devastation right. of losing everything you have. And also, Ben, the slow burn of watching it actually go down, where some people haven't evacuated, like, you know, it's right next door, and now my house is gone as well. I just can't imagine that trauma. So certainly, as Ben pointed out, thinking of all the people, first responders all the way through, homeowners, anybody out there, evacuees, maybe tonight you get a little bit of a reprieve because you can watch your favorite football team play a game and cheer them on. But my goodness, the minute that game is over, you go back to reality, and that's the tough part.
Even a state away with the Rams technically billed as the home team tonight in Arizona, it will be an emotional Monday night, no doubt about it. Now to the actual game to end out wild card weekend. The Vikings were a road favorite, even with the game originally scheduled for SoFi Stadium. The number now 2.5 in favor of the Vikes in Glendale. Total 47 and a hook. We did see the line work back to the Vikings ever so slightly when the destination of this game was moved. I'll just say this, the Rams don't exactly have the best home field advantage. It's a destination for opposing fan bases, and many that love the Vikes would love to get out of Minneapolis or Minnesota this time of year and head to Southern California. So I don't really take a lot of stock in this game now being in Glendale, not a true home environment for Los Angeles. It changes the logistics for both teams in terms of their preparation. Let's talk about the football teams against one another. How do you think they match up tonight, DRS, to end out wild card weekend?
Look, home field advantage is big. And I know a lot of people say, like, and again, you're rightfully so, Minnesota fan base travels really well. They would have had a meet. Like, who knows if even who would have had more fans in the building, as crazy as that sounds, because LA still trying to build their fan bases up, only being back in the city for a few years. But understand this, home field advantage is much more, Ben. When you get to sleep in your own bed, you get to take your car to the stadium. You're in your home locker room. The other team is traveling and you're not. Now, all of a sudden, you expected to get that advantage to yourself. And now you're going on the road. When Minnesota always knew, Ben, they were going to travel. And whether or not they were traveling to LA or Arizona or Philadelphia, it didn't matter. They were on the road. So that certainly says something to it. And understanding just the, you know, thought process of, we're playing in another field, we don't get home field advantage, but also I'm worried about my family. I'm worried about my house. Like, I'm worried about everything back home, and I still have to play a football game. Now, the Rams are doing everything they can with Stan Kroenke, the owner, flying down multiple planes of family members, even pets, making these players feel as home as possible. But they understand they're not really home at this point. That's a distinct advantage now to Minnesota. Also understand this, you're going to an environment which is still a dome. That certainly does help the Vikings and the Rams. So from a play perspective, typically you'd say, okay, let's just say the Rams' home field advantage was something and the crowd was loud. You're now operating with two teams technically on the road, but really not in that road environment, which means the crowd won't be as loud. The two dome teams playing in a dome. I actually think that helps the total more than anything because neither team is really going to be up against it when they have the football. That should help out. I do think Minnesota, to me, is the better football team and should bounce back in that game from Detroit, but I'm looking for a pretty good effort here. The one thing I love about it is you saw the Rams, the final game of the season, rest their key players, which is so big. You saw the Vikings not having the chance to rest their players because they were playing in a Super Bowl of the NFC North, which, again, we're wondering how they bounce back after saying, boy, if we won that game, we're home, we have a bye, we might be able to make it to the Super Bowl, now doing it on the road. So I do think some of that stuff evens out. But for me, I think it impacts maybe the total more than anything because that not having the true home field environment for one team.
We have not seen a ton of offense throughout wild card weekend. Only our first game of five throughout Saturday and Sunday in Houston between the Chargers and the Texans pushed to the over 32-12. Total was 41.5. That was 44 points. Again, we have not seen a ton of offense. Highest total of the entirety of the opening round was last night on a Sunday in Tampa. 51 and a hook. It stayed well under with the Commanders winning 23-20. This number 47.5. DRS, Minnesota is a 14-3 football team. That has to be a wild card team when all is said and done, because the only team in front of them played in their same division, the Detroit Lions. The Vikings also behind the Lions in terms of cover percentage. Detroit 12-5 ATS this year. Minnesota second best cover team, 11-5-1 against the spread. But the Rams as an underdog have been pretty darn good with Matthew Stafford under center since week number five. Because through the first five games this year for Los Angeles, they started 1-4. And then they won 9 of their next 11, including a short week, Thursday night game, week number 7, that the Rams turn things around against the Vikings, or perhaps week number 8. Regardless, short week Thursday night in L.A. The Rams won outright as a 2.5-point underdog against Minnesota, 30-20, in a game that featured a total of 46.5. Those numbers, way back for that Thursday night football game in October, looked very similar to the numbers tonight out in Arizona. 2.5-point spread in favor of the Vikings, a total at 47.5. We will continue to break this game down with the player prop perspective as well, next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. It's a Monday to kick off a new week, but a Monday night football finale to end out the opening round of the NFL postseason wild card weekend. Tonight in Glendale, Arizona, it's the Rams playing host to the Minnesota Vikings. Again, the game moved because of the dangerous wildfires continuing to rage in Los Angeles. 2.5-point spread in favor of the Vikings with a total at 47.5. DRS, we have talked about this game. Now let's dive into the players that will impact the outcome directly, otherwise known as the prop market. You mentioned it. Minnesota was playing for a divisional championship last weekend. The Vikings hoping for a number one seed, the bye and home field advantage. They came up short in Detroit because of the worst performance in a Vikings uniform by Sam Darnold. Season low completion percentage, season low passing yardage output. Did not throw an interception, but also did not throw a touchdown. His number tonight against LA, 264.5. On the other side, the veteran, Matthew Stafford, 242.5. You can see the numbers that are pretty similar everywhere else. How do you compare these two quarterbacks tonight in this Monday night football finale to wild card weekend?
Both should have success, but I'm looking for that bounce back from Sam Darnold, who had a bad performance against Detroit, and Kevin O'Connell, who's going to be up for that coach of the year. I know it's already been voted on, and it doesn't count in the playoffs, but you can't tell him he's going to have back-to-back horrible performances there, because Sam Darnold's been great this entire season. Wasn't great last week, but that was a tough environment in Detroit. Fans going nuts, a big Super Bowl stage, or maybe it was a little bit too big, but it's good that he got a piece of that last week. Said, you know what? Didn't play my best. Going on the road against a team of a lesser defense to me with the Rams, I should be able to provide, and that's up to the coach. But if, honestly, if we're saying, Donnie, which quarterback do you trust more? Of course it's going to be Matthew Stafford. Been there, done that, done it longer, and has a Super Bowl championship. He's not going to buckle in that environment. He's got a couple great wide receivers and a running back. But for me, if I'm betting statistics here, I'm expecting that Vikings offense to return to what they've been doing over the season to opposing defenses. I like the over 1.5 touchdowns. It's way more expensive on Darnold than Stafford, but I do believe that. Also, anytime interception, he's going to throw one. I'd probably bet that as well for Darnold, but I look for a better performance in the air, over 264, multiple touchdown passes, but does probably mix in an interception.
Again, last week, 18 of 41, 166 yards. Both of those season lows or season worst. No touchdowns, no INT. Sam Darnold had played such clean football relatively down the back end of this season. 7 of 8 entering the regular season finale last Sunday night in the Motor City. Multiple touchdowns and was throwing the ball well. 18 touchdowns, I believe, to 2 INTs. Matthew Stafford. This Rams team has been interesting in the ways they have found variety ways to win. He's been under this number in 4 of the last 5, the only time over in that shootout against the Buffalo Bills. But in the final 3 wins for LA, week 15, 16, 17, low-scoring games where the defense allowed a total of 24 points. Well under these numbers for Stafford, a guy that got a lot of usage in the defensive grinded out wins for the Rams to make sure they could win the NFC West. That was Kyren Williams. 81.5, his number tonight. Aaron Jones, slightly banged up last week, perhaps wasn't a huge factor of the Vikings offense in Detroit. What do you expect out of the backs in this matchup?
Aaron Jones is the factor tonight. Also, take a look at Cam Akers, a little bit under the weather, not practicing due to an illness. Also, you look for the entirety of the season. Aaron Jones was wonderful. Doesn't get the ball a ton as if like a Saquon Barkley or Derrick Henry, but he hasn't been himself the past couple weeks with that thigh injury. Getting a full practice in his last practice, I'm expecting him to be used because key, if you watch the Detroit game, he was missing those explosive plays, not using him in the red zone, throwing a little bit too much. He's the key to the offense. We use it's Justin Jefferson or the quarterback itself. Now, I actually think it's Aaron Jones. If he gets over 59.5 rushing yards tonight, that really bodes well for the Minnesota Vikings winning this game. So he is my key to the offense tonight, and I do think he excels. He's going to be used tonight because why? Once again, Ben, there is no tomorrow. There's no saving your running back for the next weekend. If it takes 20 carries out of Aaron Jones tonight to get that done, he's going to need to do it. I like his numbers tonight.
And when you look at the receivers tonight, DRS, pick your poison. Mm-hmm. It's as good as you will find. Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Puka Nacua. Might we see Cooper Kupp step up once more?
Yeah, where are you, Coop? Yeah, exactly. We need that again. You're looking at the offense. Just told you it's Aaron Jones. It's not actually Puka Nacua. We know he's going to be there. If we're getting nothing again from Cooper Kupp, they're not winning this game. We need Cooper Kupp of 2 years ago. 7 catches, 80 yards, and a touchdown at a minimum tonight to win this game. Where you at, Cooper? We're looking for you.
DRS, the last 3 games for LA because they rested all their starters in the regular season finale. Fewer than 30 receiving yards each and every time. Hour 3, our 3rd and final next.